Welcome to the last episode of Season 2 of All Who Labor. Today, we're looking at the union representing the resident assistants at Fordham's Rose Hill campus. They're represented by OPEIU Local 153. On February 1st of 2023, they petitioned for union recognition, which was refused. On March 21st of that same year, a vote legally required the university to recognize them. They started the bargaining process in May, and as of the release of this episode, they're still in negotiations. I wonder if we assume that some jobs, especially those held by young people, are just going to be somewhat miserable. You're a college student. You're going to end up in uncomfortable positions sometimes, but you chose this job, so cope. Similarly, some activities, like bargaining, are just going to be awful. There are two sides with opposing viewpoints. Tension, even hostility, is inevitable. That's just the nature of the situation. That's a really sad way of looking at things, though. Some things in life will be hard, yes, but that doesn't mean that the answer is resigning oneself to the full force of difficulty. Unions are a testament to the belief that things can be better, and that they will be if workers' voices are heard. We started the season with a look at Jesuit education. We're ending with a Catholic guest who argues that Fordham has failed to live up to its values and wants to see it do better. In a weird way, hypocrisy presents an opportunity for imagination. What if Catholic institutions led from their Catholic identity in their treatment of workers? What exciting tools would they find if they looked to their tradition as they sought workers' dignity? How could things be different? And how can we make that difference a reality? I'm Anna Nowak, and this is All Who Labor. Seamus Doherty is a sophomore at Fordham College at Rose Hill and a bargaining committee member for the Fordham Resident Assistant Union. All right, Seamus, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
So you are in the Fordham RA Union. Can you talk about why you joined the union and how you wound up on the bargaining team, but also why the RAs chose to unionize?
Yeah, there's been a lot of work into like introducing the concept and explaining why this is necessary. But to go back to the first part of your questions, I sort of inherited a lot of the unionizing. I'm a new hire, so I was hired at the end of last school year. I'm a sophomore in college. So this was as early as I was eligible to be an RA, and the RAs voted to unionize before I was hired. Any new hires, as well as everybody who is under contract, is considered part of that bargaining unit. So the second I was hired, I joined the union. Then moving on to the bargaining unit, getting into it, even before I had gone through training, we had a lot of interactions with some of the other unions on campus. And last spring, the grad students had been doing a lot of work. They were doing walkouts and we were joining them and supporting them. And so I started going to those. And moving from that, there was an open application put out to all the RAs to join the bargaining committee. Now, as a sophomore, even now, I'm pretty junior on that committee. My main role is like I talk to people. A lot of the, especially all of the senior RAs, people who have been here for 3 years and who have experienced a lot of the troubles firsthand are definitely at the forefront of making policy and writing a lot of the language. My role in the union has been pretty much just support, as well as interacting with the other unions. My job in the fall semester was I was a liaison to the grad student union. So basically, whenever they were doing something, they would tell me, and I would tell our bargaining unit. Whenever we were doing something, I would tell them, just to sort of promote cohesiveness.
What are the RAs looking for right now? What were some of the issues that drove people to join a union? And, you know, if there are issues that you see now as an RA that, although you were kind of absorbed into the union immediately upon joining, if there's anything where you're like, oh, yeah, no, this definitely needs to change.
All of our concerns basically fall into two categories. Either they're falling into compensation or they're falling into support. From my perspective, and a lot of the Fordham RAs, as well as RAs across the country, support is a really big issue. I mean, we're college students, and to use the university's own language, we are boots on the ground, first line of defense for serious mental health and physical health issues. And so as a union, we want to stratify protections for the RAs who have to go into those situations, and we want to create more rigid training and expectations for these RAs so that they have better tools in their toolbox and that they feel like they're supported to make these difficult decisions, as well as not having to make too difficult decisions. So that's the one that I see that I think I really hope that that's what our bargaining does, is protect people. And the second half of it is compensation. Across the board, when the RA programs were being developed, it was sort of a national movement. And so it was being developed via, there were stipends, and you would get like a grand or something, which, you know, in the 80s was a huge part of your college tuition, but it hasn't been adjusted for inflation in, you know, 20 years is the Fordham case.
I wanted to come in and edit in some numbers. Rose Hill RAs get room, board, and a $1,050 annual stipend. I couldn't find the stipends of RAs in the 80s, but according to the National Center for Education Statistics, the average total tuition, room, and board for a four-year private university from 1988 to 1989, at the very end of the decade, was $14,073. For the 2023 to 2024 academic year, tuition alone at Fordham Rose Hill is $60,335.
So we've taken a pay cut just because tuition has been raised so much since those days. So the compensation question is like, let's get that up to the same percentage where it was when it was originally given, and also make sure that it can't just be taken away. The RAs are in a really unsafe financial position compared to most other jobs where you can just be taken away. You can lose everything. You can be kicked out of your home as well as your main source of income. So, and the requirements for firing RAs before the sort of unionizing movement came about last year were like, if they don't like you, you're gone. So we're in a really precarious spot. Let's get some better footholds.
Are there any like misconceptions that you would like to clear up about the RA union? I know that because of the way the communications world works at Fordham, if people are going to have access to like the whole student body, it's going to be Fordham admin and not you guys. So if there's anything that you would like to say to help give people a better understanding of what's going on.
Admin does control the message, I think, and has a really easy way of controlling that narrative. And when we were originally unionizing, even before I was hired, they were able to just release these letters from administration that just told their side of the story. And often we're factually incorrect, which is pretty unfortunate. A lot of the misconceptions is that Fordham RAs are at the same standard as other New York schools, that it's sort of the industry standard to pay us and to treat us the way we are. It's not. It's definitely not true anymore. Some of the other schools in the area have since unionized and finished bargaining, but when the statement was made, it was still incorrect. And I think the general misconception, and I think this is across a lot of union experiences, is that it's just people being greedy, they want more money. Really, this is sort of a desperate move. People are in really tough spots. A lot of these resident assistants, it is the only way that they have access to higher education. It is certainly not entitled students from the suburbs who just want some more money. The people who are at the forefront of these negotiations, who are kind of leading the way for us, do it out of a sense of duty to the people around them who they see struggling, as well as a sense of necessity that this is a need and it needs to change.
What's it been like as a sophomore? You're kind of on the younger side of things and have been in this last, but it sounds like you've learned a lot about the history already. What has your experience been like as a new RA? And if you're able to talk about how that plays into union democracy, just having the voices of younger RAs lifted. And
I think being a younger RA in exactly the time frame that I'm in is an incredibly privileged position. I'm really, really lucky, blessed even to have juniors and seniors who are passionate, brilliant, leading the way, who are going to make it. So they're not going to really experience a lot of this. At most, they'll get 2 or 3 months of a new contract, but it's going to, you know, change my experience for sure. And it's going to change the experience of everybody who comes behind us. So for me, a lot of it has just been like, I really appreciate the efforts that people who are putting in who are not going to be able to see the benefits necessarily. And also, you know, union democracy stuff, I enjoy sort of being at the bottom end of the pipeline. It means that I can just sort of ride shotgun, figure out what's going on, learn from these wonderful people, and try and just understand their perspectives, because they definitely went through a different situation than I'm going through right now.
Right. I imagine some of the problems were really highlighted during COVID. Have you heard anything about that from the people who came before you?
Yeah.
About some of the unique challenges that were faced then?
Certainly. That's also another position of privilege, just based on when I came into school, is that I didn't have to do any of that in college. But the COVID RAs really had to be like first line responders. I mean, most of them weren't even here, but when it started phasing back in, and you had to be checking people when they're coming into buildings and enforcing quarantine rules as like a college student, that was a huge ask. People talk about it like it was a war. It was really, really challenging.
So I knew you a little bit. I met you a couple times when I was at Fordham, and that was through like campus ministry circles. Could you talk a little bit about how your union involvement activity is associated with your Catholic identity?
Yeah, I mean, 21st century union negotiations and the labor movement has been markedly less religious than it was, I think, in its inception in American history. I draw a lot of inspiration for my beliefs and my consideration around my own situation from like the original labor movements that are especially, you know, identified by a lot of the times their Catholic identity. But it's certainly not like a push from our organization as being a Catholic sort of idea. It's sort of like a, we need to survive. It's really not like this ideal. But I mean, I think personally, like the fighting for other people, even though like some of this stuff doesn't hurt me as much as it hurts other people, I think that the reason that you keep pushing and you keep going to this stuff, even though it's kind of exhausting, is out of a Catholic duty, very certainly for me. But it's definitely a singular experience. There's not a lot of Catholic presence in our negotiations. And there's certainly not a lot of, you know, Catholic ideas being thrown back at us too. It seems like the university is totally separated from its identity in that there's no mention of it in union negotiations, which is interesting.
It's interesting. I've talked to a number of religious people on the show, and when I was originally starting it, it was looking to see if like Catholics were kind of taking up the mantle of the labor movements of the 20th century to respond to what COVID was bringing. But there is just like, we need better conditions. It's not necessarily that I'm driven out of my Catholic identity or faith, or that is important to me, but it's like, I need to have enough money to buy food and I need a place to live. And that's legitimate. I know that you went to Rome. Can you talk a little bit about any ideas on bargaining and synodality?
Yes, there's huge connections. Everything like this is so incredibly important. I'm trying to conceive like a good way to tell the story. I ended up in Rome for a week through the Concentration in American Catholic Studies program. They took 11 students to Rome for a week during the Synod on Synodality. And we got to just speak to a lot of people who were in and about the Synod. You know, the Synod is under papal secrecy, so we didn't actually get to go in it, which actually is like really confuses people. Like you were just around it, you're hanging out like on the steps or something. But we did our best to sort of create a picture of what was going on by speaking to people who were participating, as well as interacting with all sorts of elements of the church that are coming together to put on this like kind of huge event that is going to, I think, make a huge difference, at least in the way that we think about church. Pope Francis really has led this movement of revitalizing a concept from early Christianity called synodality, which is, you know, how early Christians lived, which is walking together, just trying to live as Jesus does, abide by teachings, and really help people and encountering the other. It's not about living in homogeneity. It's about living in beautiful, diverse places and welcoming challenge. And that idea is trying to be brought back into the pretty hierarchical and complex Roman Catholic Church of the 21st century. The Synod on Synodality, it's a three-year process that started at the diocesan level, where listening sessions were held, where the lay Catholics of the parishes could speak to their priests, and then their priests would speak to their bishops, and the bishops would speak to their continental presidents of bishops, and then it would go all the way up to the Pope, and they created this first document. Then the Pope looked at the document, and they brought a bunch of random people from all over the world, I say random, but it's not random. You know, as Catholics, we believe that the Holy Spirit was guiding, you know, the Father and making these choices and picking people who can best represent us, who can speak out of their personal experience and bring about positive change within the church. This year was the first year, I say this year, this was 2023, was the first like organizational meeting where the delegates who were chosen by Pope Francis met for the month of October and went over all of the things that had been brought up in the listening sessions that reached congruity. And at the end of October, they published something called a synthesis document that summarized in a censored and, you know, semi-political way, their findings from October. That document will be reviewed over the coming year. And then in October of 2024, they'll meet again and create a final synthesis report that will advise the Pope. Doesn't mean that anything is going to concretely happen once they vote. It just means that they've created this document that the Pope will at least read. It's unique for allowing lay people and women as voting members of the Synod. You know, when we were in Rome, we got to speak with a lot of people who are in the secular world, who are working in a lot of different leadership conferences, who are trying to take this really like beautiful Catholic tradition, this really like faith and spirituality program that is so steeped in our Catholicism, and apply it to the rest of our world without it being like a forced conversion thing, and without stripping it of its identity, which I think, you know, as Fordham students, this is something that we have to interact with. As a Catholic university in America, you have to be like, we have our Catholic identity and we want to like enthusiastically welcome people who are not Catholic and make them feel home. The synodality aspect of it as a Catholic, I think, is this beautiful faith tradition. I think it's incredibly effective. We had a week of learning about it, of practicing it, and learning how to facilitate it. And with like really rigid and specific ways to go about it, there's these conversations in the spirit that it's really like firmly outlined as to how to go about this. And then you participate and you're like, this was really effective. I was just able to talk to people who I have an incredibly different perspective from, who like I fought with these people before. We have very different perspectives, and we were able to speak about it very civilly and come together on congruencies and address our divergences without it being a conflict or an issue. And I think, wow, this is amazing. Well, let's get this to the bargaining table right now. Let's figure out how to do this. And you would think at a Catholic university that it would be pretty easy to just, you know, take it up off of synodality and put it right back on the bargaining table. And we talked to people, David McCallum, SJ, who's a Jesuit, runs this organization with a bunch of other people called Discerning Leadership. And we spoke with them. And he had developed this model for navigating polarities using synodality, which is sort of like a way of, you know, navigating really, really polarized political identities and trying to figure out how people can talk to each other respectfully and civilly again, as well, without, you know, getting rid of the problem. Like, you know, you got to be able to talk about the thing that's going on without fighting each other. And he had come up with a bunch of these great ideas and really specific methods as to how we can apply this. And that was sort of like the question of the class, really, is what they wanted us to do. I mean, they sent us there for free. It was an investment. They want us to figure out how to take the stuff that we're learning there and bring it back in a way that, I mean, partly makes the university look good, but I think hopefully more, maybe this wasn't their intention, but changes the university and makes it a lot better. At the end of that class, my final project for it was like writing this huge paper with two other students on how to apply synodality to university leadership. And it's like 20 pages now, and we're in first draft, and we're not even like first halfway through the introduction, where it's a really complicated problem. But you're super enthusiastic. You come back from an immersion like this and you're like, yes, come on, let's get after it. Let's take everything we learned there. Let's put it right on the bargaining table. But as like one of the few openly Catholic people in our union, which I think is, yeah, it's what it is. I'm not trying to change other people, but I'm just there and sure, my identity is part of it. It's not something that you can come back and be like, hey guys, I just talked to the Pope. He's got this great idea for us. and even like, The university as a Catholic apparatus is also not going to go for that. So you can't, like, it's really challenging to map those things onto it. You kind of have to do it sneakily. You kind of have to figure out ways to do it without openly addressing its origins in, you know, early Christianity to now modern Catholicism, and be like, I think that this is how we should go about it. So it's a complicated problem of, like, you know, the solution to another problem. How do you get people to accept that solution? Or it's also not really a solution, but here's a process for making it better, at least. Like the bargaining table, I don't know if you've sat in on one of these sessions, but it's kind of a miserable experience. It's you're walking through fire to try and to fix these things. I know some people who really enjoy it, but really, I mean, if you're interested in trying to make things better, sitting through a 4-hour bargaining session really is a lot of fun. And I think the synodality could make this a lot better. But, you know, how do you go from this really Catholic tradition to people who have, I mean, a lot of people have been hurt by Catholicism and sort of resent the hypocrisy that's happening in our Catholic university, who say, you know, live for others, and that we're trying to develop a whole person, you know, cura personalis, and you're denying dental. Like, that's literally the whole person. Like, the university is pretty openly hypocritical about their Jesuit and Catholic identity. And I don't think that even as a member of the university, you can say that you aren't, because it's pretty clear cut. Their argument is that we just can't care for the whole person right now. Like, we just don't have those resources. That's awful. I don't think that's true. So that's why we're in bargaining. But that, you see the problem there is that the university has taken the moral high ground of Catholic identity and sort of ruined it for labor organizers who are trying to bring Catholicism into it by saying, like, those guys have, like, the best claim to Catholicism. Their university is run by priests. They have all of these communities in it, and they're making a mess out of it. They've made a mess out of their faith. They're not doing what they say they should be doing. They're not walking the walk, which makes it really challenging as a young Catholic who is in this whole movement of trying to create positive change through a Catholic lens. Makes it really challenging because our Catholic institutions have sort of ruined its good name.
Yeah, no, you there. That was a big question. And I think you put those pieces together really beautifully. I did an IFTJ presentation bringing Jesuit values to the bargaining table. The Catholic faith and these charisms within Catholicism have so much that could make things better. But part of it is asking, one of our values was contemplatives in action. And somebody mentioned, like, yeah, like, it'd be helpful if management contemplated on themselves a bit and really thought if, you know, what they were doing was for the common good. But it's tricky if people aren't necessarily going to buy into them. And it's a tragedy if we have a process that has worked in, or I don't know if it's worked, you would know better than me, that we're really seeing the Catholic Church uphold and try to do new things with. We can't necessarily apply it to a setting that could really, really benefit, because as you said, like, the bargaining table is not a fun place to be. Before our last question, is there anything that I haven't asked you that you would like to say?
Yeah, I would say that the unionization of the grad students and the resident assistants, as well as the mobilization of the general student populace, is a result of a general failure of the administration of the university. This represents the fact that our administration has separated from the ideal of what they were supposed to be doing. Maybe they were never together, you know, and they probably can't be, you know, that's human, but we've gone pretty far. So the unionization is a challenge to that. We want people to either say where they actually are or try and get better into congruency with the things that they're talking about, with their Jesuit Catholic identity, with welcoming people, with caring for the whole person, and with living for other people. We want to go away from being this profit-driven machine when we're supposed to be a nonprofit Catholic university and go back into making an experience that creates good people who then can create good in the world.
Final question. Could you tell a story from your work life, RA related or not, good, bad, something that stands out to you?
I've been working since I was 14 legally in Minnesota. I'm from Minnesota. The working age is pretty young there. And coming to New York, I had a lot of respect. And I felt pretty proud. I liked being, I worked growing up. I worked every summer. I have a pretty strong belief in the dignity of the worker. I think it's the Catholic social justice teaching that I really stand with. And becoming an RA, like the entrance into this, which was going to be this huge thing for my family financially, it was going to mean that I was going to be able to survive college without debt, was also coming into it and being like, this is kind of awful. All of these people who I'm being hired to work with have some pretty serious issues. And so I was really stressed in May after I'd gotten hired, because I was like, this is going to be really hard, or I might really not like this, or this is going to be, I'm going to get fired because we're striking or something awful. Like, it's going to be over before it even begins. And an RA who's a junior, they were my, or one of the RAs in my building last year, took some time after our first bargaining meeting and took me aside and said, I'm realizing that what you've experienced about this job so far sucks. Like, if I was you, I would be miserable. I wouldn't be here. I want you to know that it's worth it, that I actually really like this job. They were really passionate about being able to help other students, about being a role model for other people, as well as getting to be a community steward. And they said that they loved it, and that it was one of the best things that they had ever done, and that they were fighting because they wanted to protect that. And that made a huge difference for me. It's, you know, the reason that I stayed involved with the bargaining committee, the reason that I've, you know, continued to try and push and become a better resident assistant and really become committed to the job, which is something that I've really enjoyed. I think it's sort of the puzzle piece in the puzzle of my college experience that was been really foundational. But I think that story of, you know, if you're a grizzled vet and you're going through it, you're in the weeds, and you see these new kids coming up who are, you know, just getting into it, when you're close to the finish line, it's difficult. But I think it's incredibly important if you take the time to, you know, share the good, show some of the love that you feel for what you're doing, if it can be, you know, something that you enjoy as well as something that provides for you. Try and emphasize that, because it made all the difference for me.
That's really beautiful. Thank you so much for sharing.